One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, and welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We are your hosts, Kim France.
And I'm Jen Romolini.
And today we're going to have a chat, just me and Jen. Jen, how are you? How's the tail end of your trip to the East Coast been?
It's been really good. And we should say that we're kind of having a chill summer and a little bit of a chill summer with the podcast. We have a lot of fun guests coming up for the fall, but we're kind of both having a chill time right now, right? And you're traveling a lot, I'm traveling a lot, and we're giving ourselves a little less pressure. So we're just having casual conversations with each other.
Cash conversations. And it kind of makes me think about why we're that way in August. And I think it's because we worked in magazines for so many years where there were summer Fridays.
Yes.
And everything was kind of languid and slow, even though in reality you're working on big issues, fall issues. It was such a chill way to work in the summer.
Totally. And, you know, in Europe, nobody even works at all in August. So it feels like, just like we talked about the last time you and I were just talking, it feels like a nice time to just have things a little bit more chill. By the time this comes out, it will be the last week of summer, I think.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. Sorry. I hate to tell you that, but yes.
No, I know. I just really like summer better than all the other seasons.
I know. But it's okay. I'm excited about fall. I'm ready for shift. I'm ready to shift. I can feel myself ready to get motivated again. Which is something I wanted to talk to you about. I read an article today about a listener sent us in an article about what determines career success after 50.
Really?
Which I thought was really interesting. It's the psychological formula for success after age 50.
I really want to hear what that psychological formula is.
You want to know? Anyway, they did a study of 48,000 people over time, and they found that people over 50, and then there's all these examples of like people who had amazing third acts, like Estelle Getty, who landed her breakout role on Broadway at age 58, and in her 60s racked up 7 back-to-back Emmy nominations for the Golden Girls.
My God.
Julia Child didn't start the French Chef on TV. She didn't start on TV until she was 50. Then there's this other person, I don't know who Ray Kroc is, but that person began franchising McDonald's at age 52. Anyway.
Yes, so. Ray Kroc, I believe, invented McDonald's.
Yes. Okay. Well, but didn't start franchising it, which was where the real money was.
Where the real money was, sure.
So this is, they give you 5 steps for success post 50.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay. this is like a little sidebar in this article because I'm not going to read the whole thing to you. But okay, so it's called How to Stoke the Fire Post 50. Okay. Number one, make it meaningful. Avoid work you don't find compelling. So that's one.
Fair enough.
Okay. Move your body. Physical activity is very important to keep the gray and white matter in your brain more functional. Older people who are physically active, they tend to be more successful because getting your heart pumping gets your brain working and it makes you be more likely to stay consistent in what you're doing. Huh. Fight weakness. Nurture your weakest trait by surrounding yourself with people and deadlines that bolster you. If your entrepreneurial passion is fading, find an enthusiastic business partner and join an incubator program. I'm never joining an incubator program. I don't even know what that is. but the idea is if you fear you won't be able to do something like write a novel, do whatever you want, and you really want to do it, like join a weekly writing group or hire a book coach, do something that will help facilitate whatever your weakness is. And I don't know, I think for both of us, it can be follow through.
I would say that's fair.
Learning new skills will improve cognitive function.
I believe that. So,
you know, learning a new language or a musical instrument. But basically, this article is all, that's the sidebar, but basically this article is all about, which it doesn't say in the sidebar, is that grit, keeping up grit and passion for doing things, those are the two, grit, passion, and a growth mindset are the three things that all start to wane as we get older. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep those three things going, you can kind of do anything you want. It's like not getting stuck.
But how do you do that? Because if you're in your 50s, say, you've been working for a long time and you've been working in your chosen field or your field for a long time. And how do you keep grit and passion alive when you've just been doing the same fucking thing for years?
Okay. This basically is telling you just people who, it's not, look, it doesn't tell you that.
No, I'm just curious. Okay. I'm not disputing the piece. I'm just curious myself.
I think that my opinion, because I am still super passionate about the things I want to do. And I don't know what motivates you. And I was going to ask you that today, like what still motivates you? But one thing that really motivates me is assholes who discount me. Mm-hmm. When I'm condescended to, when I'm treated like I don't matter, when I'm treated like I'm stupid because I forgot something, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'm still very motivated by I'll show you. That is still a big thing for me. And then the other thing that is still a big motivating factor for me is a sort of race with time. Like, well, what do I think I'm going to regret when I'm 70 having not done? Mm-hmm. What, you know, the window closing and feeling like, well, if I never try, am I going to regret it? And some things I won't regret. Like, I don't keep a particularly clean or neat home, and I don't know that I'm going to regret that when I'm 70. Also, there's many opportunities to do that. But I feel like the things that I think I might regret, like, you know, making a career pivot when I'm really bored with something, writing a second book. I at some point want to write a novel. You know, I know there are things that I want to try to do before it's too late to maybe enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
So that motivates me.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I'm thinking what motivates me? Fear, certainly. Fear of failure, fear of disappointing people.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Fear of disappointing whom? Whomst?
That's a good question. That's actually not such an easy question to answer. I wonder whoever I'm interacting with at the time, whoever my boss of the moment was.
Right.
You know, I think I don't know what the fuck I'm motivated about. And I think some of it has to do with, well, I mean, like with this podcast, you know,
right.
I'm motivated to like have it become huge.
Right. Right.
But I can't say what motivates me to want. I mean, maybe, you know, relevance, the desire to continue to be relevant. I think that motivates me.
Yes. And I do think, I do hear you in a collaboration. I've been doing more collaborations, like one-on-one collaborations in the last couple of years. And I will say the collaboration and the accountability motivates me.
Yes, me too. I mean, I'm a person who probably should be in an office just because I'm not a great self-motivator.
Right.
Consistently, you know.
Right.
I'm glad I'm not, but I do think that's where I'm the most productive. Now, I didn't do what I said I was going to do, though, in this episode. I told myself, I'm now sitting here with a piece of paper and a pen, mm-hmm. because I keep forgetting what we're talking about while we're talking about it,
Then
I forget what my point is. So now I'm writing down what we're talking about so that I can, like, remember.
All right. I mean, I feel good about that. I feel like, you know, whatever tricks and whatever aids you need, I always have notes with me. But, you know, I'm the dork. I think the habit started for me of notes because I was so anxious in meetings. I don't know if you remember this, but I hated talking meetings. I used to break out in hives anytime we had meetings at Lucky editorial meetings. My whole chest would be in hives, my whole neck. And I used to write down, because in those editorial meetings and subsequent meetings that I had, obviously at a certain point, it comes around to your turn and it's time for you to pitch or it's time for you, whatever. And you have to do that. You have to show up appropriately. And I was so bad at it that I started always having notes with me, including like kind of a mini script of what I was going to say, including sometimes so it would sound more natural, writing like an in the middle.
That's so awesome.
Because I can be really socially anxious. And so I had to do things to adapt. And as I'm getting into this age and perimenopause just sort of slowing my brain down and putting it in a fog so often, I need more cues than ever. So I usually have notes somewhere for our episodes to think about, oh my God, I want to say that. And if we do talk about that, I want to make sure that I make this point. I try to do that.
Right.
I think that this stage of life, one of the most difficult things about it, and I was thinking about this last night because I haven't had hot flashes and night sweats for 2 nights, mm-hmm. a miracle, right? And I was thinking about one of the biggest challenges is that it's always kind of changing. Like you're in a bad memory spot right now. I might be in a really bad insomnia spot next week. Mm-hmm. If I could get used to one way of being, it's that it's all physically in flux. Cognitively, I feel in flux. Some days I have no recall, like basic recall. And some days I have hot flashes and some days I can't eat certain foods and then it changes the next week.
Yeah, menopause and perimenopause don't follow any rules.
Yes, and that is the most difficult because we want to feel a sense of control, particularly as we get older.
Yes.
And there's nothing to be controlled here. You might be sweaty all night. You might not. You know what I mean?
And there's a lot of dissonance because it is a time in many people's lives when they feel more control over who they are, their life circumstances, their work, than they have in the past, just from having been around for a long time.
Right, you've established yourself.
Yes,
many of us have. Right.
Yeah, and I think the dissonance is really disturbing between like, you know, oh, I've got this mastered, and oh my God, I'm such a beginner.
Yeah, and just but then you know, and also just the emotional highs and lows, which affects your self-esteem, and you know when you're really feeling dark, when it's really bleak, and then the next day it's not, and it's just the hormones are so up and down, you know. And by the way, as I was just talking to you, I just forgot what I had a follow-up that I was. Oh, here it is. Sorry, I got it. I do think that perimenopause and menopause, the whole menopause transition, prepares us for getting older in a way that men just don't have. They don't get the preparation because they don't go through anything like this, which makes you sort of have to be in your body and accept your body. accept that your body is kind of in control more than you are. Mm-hmm. And I think having to come to peace with that earlier, and also it makes us more in tune with our bodies in a way. I think men are very surprised by aging in their 60s. I think they're like, what? My knee? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Whereas we're like, yeah, man.
Like, yeah. It's a more gradual burn for women.
It's a more gradual burn, and we get more of a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. Although I really thought that midlife crisis was such a cliche. Like, I thought it would never happen to me. And I realized it's been kind of happening to me lately.
Tell me how.
Well, it's mostly a fashion thing, to be honest. I think I was trying to push the envelope because, I mean, you know, this is a very mild midlife crisis. You know, it's not like I'm out being like, oh, who, what, you know, how young of a dude could I fuck? I'm not having that. I don't need to buy like some fancy sports car. Like, I'm not having any of that shit, which is like, I think a midlife crisis is you're feeling like, oh, hell, there's only so much longer that I'm going to get to do X. I better do it now. Right.
Yeah.
Whether it be, you know, having a younger sexual partners, whether it be, you know, buying a stupid car, you know, the cliches around it. Mine is there's only so much longer that I'm going to get to wear X. I better do it now. And it really has been backfiring for me. I'll say I really pushed it to a limit that was stupid and ridiculous this summer. I wrote about this on our Patreon. I bought this crop top, mm-hmm. and I looked fine in it. Like, it was such a stupid thing. I wrote about it on our Patreon. It was from this brand called, like, Praying, and it's some, like, weird... Brands are so weird right now, and it's hard to find brands and It's hard to find new labels that you're really interested in, I feel like, because I feel like it's just... fashion magazines are irrelevant, etc. So it's by this brand Praying that I had found on like some internet stalking Instagram something and, you know, clicked on it. And it was a little crop top that I thought was also jokey, and it said God's favorite across the top. And I was like, mm-hmm. that's funny. I'm going to wear that. And I got it. And it was not only a crop top, but like a tight crop top. So it cut off mm-hmm. right under my boobs, so tight that I got a rash.
Oh my God.
And I was wearing it because my midriff is not the worst. And that's the other thing I've been thinking, like, this is going to get wrinkled soon. If it doesn't blow up, like, something's going to. So I wore it like out in the world, and I just felt so stupid. And I was like, oh, this is over. Not because I can't wear it, because I don't want to anymore.
See, you're letting go to this of the side of the plane.
I am. I'm letting go. And I think that's what a midlife crisis is really, is like, is the letting go. But I never really understood it. It just seems so stupid and something would never happen to me.
It always seemed like a very male thing to me and not yes. so much something that women go. I mean, it is true that when I hit my 50s, I tattooed my forearms like enormously.
That
could
that's
be
true.
Seen as something of a midlife crisis. But I generally think of it as a male thing and something that involves, like, you know, all the cliches.
Right. Well, acting out. It's acting out.
Yeah, it's acting out. And I don't know that women do that as much. I just
no.
don't. And well, I think maybe it yeah. is because it goes more gradually for women. It isn't as much of a, like, a sudden sea change.
Right. It's not as much of a steep drop off. We're kind of like, oh, that's weird. You know,
like, well, because it happens so gradually, it's like, oh yeah, that length of skirt doesn't look so good anymore. Oh yeah, it hurts when I stand and when I sit. Like, oh yeah, like it all just it trickles, you know, because it will really overwhelm you if it all happened at once.
Well, it's a slow adapting, because it's like, it hurts if I stand unless I mitigate it with these three things, you know? It hurts when I'm eating too many inflammatory foods and my joints get all inflamed. So, oh, I can't really eat French fries in the same abundance that I used to eat French fries. They don't work for me anymore. So it is all these like subtle adjustments. And
yep.
I feel like today I'm wearing like a little... nautical boat neck tee, striped long sleeve tee, and also a pair of shorts that are a little longer. And I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, this feels right. This feels right. Like 5 years ago, this would have felt like a little too conservative for me. But, oh, wow, this really is starting to feel right. I'm feeling good in this kind of a look, which is just fucking weird. It just, I think that's what it is. It's just constantly changing.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I think I've been dressing like a boy for a while now.
Right.
And last night I was around some people and one of the women was a rock star's wife. And she was a rock star wife. She was very feminine. She was wearing like the kimono. She had like beautiful blonde hair. And I'm standing there in like my, you know, popover in my jeans, just feeling like a guy. You know, and just thinking like, why do I, like, I have really like forfeited all femininity as far as the way I dress is. And I kind of want to change that. But like there are so many, I look at what's in stores now and I look at like what, like, I'm not going to wear puffy shoulders. I'm not going to wear those crazy big lapels. I don't even know how you do. I don't even know how you dress that way.
I know. Like, I was thinking the same. I weirdly had the same thought the other day. I was like, I don't dress sexy anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't have like a going out top. Do you remember when you had like a going out top? It was like, that's my sexy top.
Yes, yes. It's at Sassy, we called it an excitement top.
Yes, it's an excitement top. I don't have excitement tops. Me. I have aging ceramicist. which I love. But like, it's kind of moving frumpy. It's either frumpy or like, it's like frumpy or silly. And I don't know what a sophisticated, sexy person looks like.
But you know them.
I do. You know, your friend Renee, I remember a couple of years ago when Renee was in a new relationship, she was sorting out how to look sexy as a middle-aged person. And she looked amazing. I remember she was wearing like some like kind of frilly but sheer black blouse. And she had a lot of chains on and black jeans and like a boot with a heel. And it was very simple and it was very sexy. And I thought, I don't ever wear, like, I'd been in a relationship with my husband by that point, like a decade. And I was like, I don't do anything like that. I don't even try. I haven't been trying sexy in how the fuck long? I don't know.
I do make a token effort with the lingerie.
Yes, you do.
I will make an effort there.
Yeah.
And, yep. You know, maybe that's kind of sexy that, like, you know, I look like somebody who'd be wearing like a CK1 bra or something.
Yeah. I tie-dyed a bunch of underwear last year to varying results.
Seeing that on social media, I think.
Yeah, it's not. That's all I've been wearing and tie-dye over time. And I really need to up my lingerie game, I think, because it's really just a clown car under here. And
well, I have this new bra brand I love. I mean, it's a whole lingerie brand. I just buy bras for them. It's called Else, ELSE.
Oh,
Else as in someone else or something.
Okay.
And because during COVID, I totally stopped being able to wear underwire bras, which is what I wore before because I wasn't wearing bras at all. And so I was like, you know what? It's not like my tits are that big. I don't have to ever wear an underwire. So I've been investigating like sexy bralettes, and this company Else does some really nice ones.
Yeah, I think I'd like to move into that. It all feels like such a hassle. Like, I'm like, oh, God. And then what is your match on the bottom? Like, what if the underwear doesn't match? And then I'm in, like, this tie-dye situation on the bottom with the sexy bra. And I'm staying at my mother-in-law's right now. And my mother-in-law is a very exacting person. Like, she has five different trash categories. Okay.
I know.
Yes. I mean, I can't even. And they're all, if you really talk, she's a person who is really, she's like a walking real simple, you know, like she understands like, well, you need to dry out the tea bag before you put it in the compost. So then your compost isn't wet. And I'm like, I would have never thought of that
in a million years.
But I'm watching the way she does stuff and the way she folds clothes and the way she thinks about like her laundry. And like, she's taught me some things and I'm realizing I want more of that in my life. I want more of, keeping the washer door open so the washer doesn't get moldy. This had never occurred to me, and it frustrates me that my washer is a little moldy and it grosses me out and I need to figure out how to wash it. And I was like, how do you keep your washer from being moldy? And she was like, yeah, you just keep the door open a little bit. And I was like, seriously, my brain was blown, you know? Like,
But this is how you accumulate knowledge like that, by, yes, like, you know, your mother-in-law knowing things.
Yeah, and I want to stop being lazy. I think I'm inherently, like, not about everything, not about work, but I'm inherently lazy, like even talking about the underwear, like, oh, well, how would I find things that matched? You would just come out with fucking sets and you would put them together in a drawer and neatly fold them and that's it. It's not that hard.
I know. I mean, given like this lazy streak that runs through both of us, it's amazing we make this podcast happen every week.
I seriously cannot believe it.
Because I feel the same way. And it's so interesting because I've been so driven in my career at different points and driven just in my personal life. And I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But the rest of me could really be like, you know, sort of a combination Pigpen Mr. Magoo. Like, I could just sort of move through the world very messy, sort of blindly walking around things. And with a stroke of just, like, slacker. Just a slacker stroke of being like, oh, I don't want to.
I know.
When that kind of productivity, I think, that's not like the work and the chasing, you know, chasing capitalism, whatever. That kind of productivity, like, in your house, and just keeping like things orderly, I actually think that's really healthy in a way that felt oppressive to me most of my life. That sort of order makes me, I kind of aspire to it in a new way.
I mean, I like order. I like order in my home. I like order on my desk, but it's really skin deep.
Oh. Are you kidding? My house is basically staged.
No, that's how I feel. Like, don't, you know, beware anyone who tries to open a closet door in this apartment.
Oh, don't open a fucking drawer in my house. You don't even know what you'll find. I'm just basically, when my desk gets too messy, I just kind of take everything and put it into the drawer. And then when the drawer gets overstuffed, I just sort of find another vessel, a cute vessel, to put all the junk in. Instead of just organizing shit.
I know, because we're not, because you're either an organized person who's good at organizing or you're not. I think you can probably cultivate some of those skills, but I've never been an organized person. There's always been some corner of a closet or some, you know, just something I wasn't doing. Like when I left my first job where I was an assistant, I was a terrible assistant. They found like, you know, rejection letters I'd never sent. And, you know, it's like the joke in the office for the month after I left was, wasn't Kim supposed to do that?
Totally. I was such a bad assistant. I was the world's worst assistant. I could never figure out how to do my boss's expenses. I think I've talked to you about this. I could never figure out how to do my boss's expenses. And so I just was shoving them in the back of a drawer. Like, yes. Oh, Kat Marnell talked to us about this.
Do you know what?
Mad about it.
You know what it reminds me of? Many, many years ago, when I was a kid, I think, a mailman, I think in Chicago, got in trouble because it turned out he had not been delivering the mail. He had been burying it in a hole.
I mean, legend. That's
right?
Lazy legend. No, but this is the thing.
So of course you've heard of it.
Of course I have. No, here's the thing that I have thought about. And this is another thing that motivates me. When I die, I do not want to leave this burden to somebody else. Like, my affairs are not in order. I do not want to have somebody go through all my weird hoarder drawers. Like, what a nightmare for somebody. That is just a cruelty to me. Like, I might as well just write a will that says burn everything. Throw it in a pile and make a fire out of it, because nobody needs my pay stubs from six jobs ago that are in this box that I left the job with that I've never touched, as if it's just a time capsule, you know?
No, nobody needs to see my transcript from my Beastie Boys interview in 1994.
I would like to see that, honestly. I would very much like to see that. I would see any of your old crap like that. Oh, so maybe actually it's not such a burden. Maybe somebody would like to go through our crap. I mean, that's a really hubristic way to look at it. But
you know, like when I think of my crap, I think like, you know, I moved in December. I got rid of a lot of crap, but I also was careful because I've gotten rid of things over the years that I've really regretted.
Yeah, I know. I've done that too. That's especially true with clothes because I'll get into that like shaming of myself, like, well, you haven't worn it in a year. You haven't, what if you never, and then I'm sad that I don't have it anymore. Like I had this amazing Halston dress, vintage Halston dress. It was never quite right on me, but it had like, it was black chiffon with gold lamé polka dots. And it had these like beautiful sheer sleeves with big cuffs. And then it was a maxi dress. And I had gotten it in one of my eBay things for like, you know, I don't know. It was like a high price for me at the time, like $100. And it was so gorgeous. It didn't fit me quite right, but I could have done something about it. So I have many things like that that I wish I had held on to because I loved them.
I know. And I feel like I'm maybe not especially good at determining which ones are going to be the things I miss and which ones are the things that can go. Like, I hung on to the dress I wore to Lucky's launch party in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I will surely never wear this dress again. You know, I threw away my wedding dress, though. I just put that in the trash.
My wedding dress, I tried on the other day. And my wedding dress at the very end of my wedding, I made it through this pristine white with a capelet little mini white dress. It was very cute. It was, it was Narciso Rodriguez. It was the most expensive thing I'd ever bought in my life off the rack. It was like a little shell dress, like that's not what it's called, but a little like shift dress.
Shift,
that's it, with a cape. Made it through the entire wedding, like many moving parts, City Hall, then we went to the Rainbow Room, then we had like this bar party, pristine. The end of the night, I go to grab my purse. There's a big glass of red wine on the bar. Somebody had not drunk, knocked the glass of red wine full, splashed red wine all over my dress. That was of my parting. And I never did anything about it. I never like got it taken in. I never took it in, tried to get the stain out. I never got it dyed. People were like, you know, because I'm drunk at the end of my wedding going, I don't know what I'm going to do. And people were like, you'll dye it. I'm like, I am never dyeing this dress. Like, it's never.
Thing is, you're never wearing the dress you got married in again. I mean, maybe somebody somewhere does.
It would be weird, right? It would be weird.
It may be a little weird.
Yeah, it might be a little weird. And now let's take a quick break for some ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we're back. What are you listening to anything new? Are you reading anything new this week? Do you have any culture recs?
Well, you know, in this week's New Yorker, or what, you know, I don't know when we'll air this, but July 9th, the article is dated.
That is not this week's New Yorker.
August.
Okay.
There is a piece by the writer Donald Antrim, who's a novelist, and he wrote about, like, coming back from being suicidal.
Oh, wow.
And it is intense. It is one intense read, but really good. What else have I been doing? I don't know. I've been listening to my favorite podcast, which is called Heavyweight, which I'm a big fan of. The guy who hosts it is very smart and funny, and he, like, resolves things for people. Like, it's basically like Closure, the show.
Yes, that is my friend Emily's husband. I know that show, but I have not listened to it.
Oh,
but
wow.
Yes. Because they were both This American Life people, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
I think it's Jonathan Goldstein. Am I right about that?
Yes, it's Jonathan Goldstein. Yes. And it's called Heavyweight, and I really, really enjoy it. And, you know, I don't know. I've been watching Call My Agent. I'm the last person to watch Call My Agent.
Call My Agent is so fun, and they're all so sexy, and it's so great. Anything French. It's just
so funny. And what did I do? I didn't go see the Alice Neal show at the Met. It closed before I could get to it. And I'm jealous of any of you out there who got to go see it, because it looked astonishing.
I
started watching Zola. I started watching Zola, and it was just too jumpy, too modern, too much like what the kids would watch. And I was like, yeah, I'll watch this again some other time.
Do you ever worry about, and you know what it's based on? You know Zola is based on that Twitter thread. Sometimes lately, I've been feeling like, God, am I out of touch? Like, I feel like I'm not, I worry about being out of touch. Like, I want to watch something like Zola. It is this push-pull between wanting to watch something like that I might not get or might not enjoy, and wanting to have watched it, and then this other thing of being like, fuck it, I don't like it, I shouldn't have to watch it.
Haven't we lived long enough that we can just like the things we like and occasionally challenge ourselves with new things, but not sweat it if we're not into them?
Yeah, we have. But, you know, I was thinking about White Lotus, right, which I haven't finished, and I'm not finishing it because I didn't really like it. And then I was like, am I missing something? Like, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about White Lotus being about, you know, an amazing,
indictment of class.
Exactly.
Yes.
Indictment of class, of white privilege. And I'm like, first I had this paranoid thought of like, am I so white privileged that I didn't pick up on that? And then I was like, no, I don't like it. I don't think it's doing that successfully. But then I was like, am I missing something? I really have this thing. Am I missing something? Am I out of touch?
I felt the same way, and also about White Lotus, because on the blog yesterday, when I announced a new episode, one of the readers listened and said, I can't believe you and Jen don't like White Lotus. It is such a brilliant commentary on class in America. It's a modern upstairs, downstairs. And I was like, wow, am I kind of clueless? And then I also, a listener wrote me a DM on Instagram and said she misses Smart Kim. So both of those things have made me feel a little out of touch lately.
Oh no.
She misses Smart Kim.
Oh God, people are so mean. It's like the person who said that I'm vain, but I cover it with self-deprecating humor. I was like, fuck off, man. First off, we should all be more vain. Like, fuck off.
Yeah, no shit. No shit.
I don't think you're not smart. Did she give you a specific example of how you're not smart
anymore? No, I think just in general, the smart went away. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry you got that DM. No, I would like to talk to more people about White Lotus, because the other thing is I feel like I'm sometimes in a bubble and I don't, because I'm not having the same kind of conversations, also because of COVID too. Mm-hmm. I'm not having the same kinds of like, oh, we all got together and we talked about things. And you got different points of view on it. So you do have an isolated point of view. And I don't want that in my life. And I do read sort of ancillary reviews and everything. I don't
I don't want to become weird and sheltered, but at the same time, I don't want to fucking, I'm past the time in my life where I'm going to pretend I like something that I don't like. I just,
No shit.
That's it. But I am listening to something I'm really enjoying. I mean, I don't know if you're finished with the, I think you're smart.
Okay. Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
I am listening to Lucille Ball has a new podcast. Go figure. She died a million years ago. In the 60s, Lucille Ball had a radio show where she interviewed celebrities, these really like micro interviews. She did it for CBS Radio. Mm-hmm. And her daughter held on to these recordings all of these years, and they've just released them as a podcast called Let's Talk to Lucy.
Oh, wow.
And it is so fun. It is really cool. She was so cool and ahead of her time in so many ways. Hmm. I'm also sure that, you know, she would have been canceled today. I'm sure there are many problematic things about Lucille Ball that I'm not. And I want to say this because I like to say this because I don't read everything. And I did not look up, which I normally do, Lucille Ball canceled, which is normally what I do before I talk about anything, because I want to make sure, like, you know, it's not a J.K. Rowling situation, you know. And there was another one recently that I was like, I think that person was canceled, that you and I were talking about. But this podcast is her interviewing. She interviews some Vegas showgirls. She interviews Frank Sinatra. She interviews Carol Burnett. She interviews Danny Kaye. And she talks to Frank Sinatra about what it means to be a good friend. She talks to Danny Kaye about being a home cook and what she likes about cooking and what she doesn't like about cooking. And she talks about being away from her kids while she's working and like what it's like for both of them to be away from their kids. And there's this line at some point she says, you know, I never had a chance to be anything but a character to the public. And this is a chance to be myself. And it's really kind of cool. I really am interested in it because it's interesting. It's interesting to hear something that was recorded in the 60s that's basically modern day podcast format. It's right. Kind of just conversational. And, you know, these people are people that she knows. And so, you know, she's friendlier. I bet it was a lot less formal than most of this kind of thing at the time, right?
Yeah.
There's a lack of formality. So anyway, I recommend Let's Talk to Lucy. That's my big rec for the week.
I am totally going to check that out.
Yeah, it's fun.
Awesome. Well, we've chatted for quite a while now.
Oh, we have? Oh, we've chatted for 40 minutes. Yes.
We've chatted for 40 minutes. We better wrap it up before our listeners get bored.
Before they get bored. Well, thanks for listening to Everything is Fine. We're your hosts. I'm Jen Romolini.
And I'm Kim France.
If you like the show, you can rate and review it on all the platforms. It really helps us find new audience. If you want to support the production of the show, we are on Patreon. Our Patreon is patreon.com/everythingisfine. And in September, we're going to be really ramping up our Patreon offerings. We'll have some announcements around that coming up in a couple of weeks. We are also on Instagram at EIF Podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. And you can find Kim at her blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.